talk today is on injury prevention through conditioning, how are we conditioning our athletes. The contents, I'm not a big reader of these. I do want to point out this picture here at the bottom. obviously, it's an athlete that's looking at a piece of paper that has letters like your Snellen chart, and the gentleman laying on the ground has one that's further out. You know, just we'll hit back on there a little bit later, but just want to kind of point out the picture. At the conclusion, these are hopefully things that you all be able to obviously name and use and kind of have a better appreciation for. Disclosure, I have no financial or commercial relations with any of this presentation. I'm just like you all, I'm just an athletic trainer. I really would like to thank the SPATS committee for inviting me down here to talk. You know, my fiance and I had a great time a couple years ago, and you know, really fortunate to get the phone call this past year, and we're really excited to be back down here. And I for you all, I really appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to come down and talk. Who was at my talk that I did a couple years ago? Handful of people. So a couple of these first slides here are going to be kind of a refresher for some of you all, and then for those who were not, obviously some new information, just kind of bear with me. So my kind of talk started out last time was, you know, does this look like your athlete's training and conditioning? Show hands. So some of the practicality, you know, people ask me, you know, well, you know, this Burdenko method, you know, what is it? How can I maybe use it? You know, to me, it kind of has arms in a lot of different things, whether or not it be rehabilitation, conditioning, training, and recovery. And I find, you know, we talked a little bit on the first talk on the first day about overtraining. You know, we don't really give a lot of credit to rest and recovery as much as we do into conditioning and rehabbing and training, which I think is really a critical part of the whole process overall. So looking at the qualities, we're going to kind of go into these a little bit and kind of hit on these. But as you see, just like anything else, you know, it builds upon the next one. And that's something I really kind of strike through this talk is, you know, each step of these qualities really stacks on top of the next one. So we go into balance. So if I had asked the room here, how would you all define balance? How many of y'all would say this is balance? Nobody. Yeah, you are correct. There's a lot more to it. You know, so we look at balancing. It's a balance of training. It's forward and backwards. It's side to side. It's that equal ratio 1-to-1. Right? But also other things of balance, nutrition, hydration, rest, recovery, you know, they're all aspects of balance. And, you know, you find a lot of us probably shake our heads and say, you know, the way we train our athletes, condition our athletes, you know, there's not a lot of balance to them, is there? Right? We have a lot of whether they go to this practice and this study hall and this training and this special coach and everything, and there's not a lot of balance in what we do. We look at coordination. Right, a lot of us, you know, some of our athletes are very single-sided dominant athletes. You know, the baseball player that swings, the volleyball player that serves, right? Everything's in a certain type of coordination pattern, right? We never really go through and train that other side. And the good talk yesterday was one of the talks we talked about of having to go back and retrain some of those other coordination patterns where maybe we're unfamiliar with or uncomfortable with, right? And it is challenging. I'm sure a lot of you all could agree with me if I said, hey, I want you to brush your teeth with your opposite hand this morning. A lot of y'all, that toothbrush may be in your head, right? Or maybe on your shoulder, right? Just such a different coordination pattern. We look at flexibility. You know, it's a really great quote, and I really like it a lot. A lot of us have probably heard of the quote, you are what you eat. And I really think there's some validity to, you know, you are what you lift. You know, we lift a lot of steel. We start bending like steel. Does steel bend very easy? Not very much. In the Burdenko method, we use a lot of tubing, right? What is elastic tubing? What's one of its qualities? Has flexibility, right? Goes back and forth just like muscles, right? We look at endurance. You know, a lot of people say, you know, are you an endurance athlete, right? All of our athletes are endurance athletes in some way, shape, or form, right? Do we train them like that? Remember, endurance is to be able to do something repetitively over and over and over again, but that same efficiency and that same effectiveness in the first one as they do the last one, yeah? Right? But then in the game, how many times do we see our athletes really tired and fatigued out, right? Have we truly trained them in that endurance component? And remember, these are all stacking, so the balance, coordination, flexibility are all components needed to have one another. And we kind of get into speed, right? Speed, you know, obviously we look at the definition, right? Distance over time, right? Everyone assumes speed is, you know, run that 4.440, right? But speed also occurs at other miles per hour, distance over time, right? How do we train our athletes with speed? Anybody? We don't really. It's a stopwatch method, right? We say, hey, once you run from A to B, go, right? But speed is just a component of training like anything else. We look at strength, and everyone assumes strength, lots of muscles and everything, right? Let's think of it rather as like a neuromuscular demand, right, that the body's adapted to, right? We look at strength and speed, right? And incorporating those qualities as we're working in rehabbing and training. So there's our qualities. Pretty nice pyramid, just like we saw before, yeah? How often are our qualities more like this when we train and rehab and condition our athletes? Hands up. Does that kind of look kind of what we do, though? Yeah. These are just some pyramids that I've, you know, go online and looked on, and you know, they all have great little things of things we include in them, and I don't think you can discredit any of them. But I think you look at a lot of the ones we talk about, I think there's some things missing in terms of how we train, how we condition, how we rehab our athletes. You know, so where is the balance? Where is the coordination? Where is the flexibility? So we look at the Burdenko principles. You know, we incorporate the qualities. I think it's a big component of what we miss sometimes. Okay, motion and breathing, and breathing with motion. How many times do our athletes hold their breath during activity? You know, how often do we really preach about really breathing in, breathing out, and make each one quality? Doesn't really happen a lot, right? It's the next rep. It's the next rep. It's the next rep, right? We sacrifice our breathing and respiratory patterns for trying to get that, you know, two more pounds on. Being in a mental zone. You know, how many of our athletes walk out of practice and say, man, I'm just mentally tired today? It's not really something we talk about. It's not something we really preach about. We preach about maybe, you know, visualizing this pitch and this, you know, that strike zone and, you know, this, you know, wide receiver pattern, but, you know, really being in the zone during our work and really focus on quality movement. We work the whole body, not just one part, you know, just not the arm, just not a bicep curl. You know, we incorporate the whole body because when the whole body moves, the whole body has to work together, yeah? But obviously, when we go into sport, the whole body has to work together, but a lot of times we focus on that bicep curl, right, or that snatch, right? Varying speeds, we talk about the importance of speed, right? Slow, medium, fast, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Rest and recovery, can't stress it enough, right? As much as we work, we got to have some sort of rest and recovery component, right? Hydration, nutrition, is that a component of rest and recovery? Absolutely, right? Shaking, we like to shake the muscles. Muscles should be nice and loose and supple, okay? Muscles that are nice and loose and supple have better elastic qualities and properties, right? Better elastic properties, guess what? Flexibility also improves, right, as well. And the one thing that, to me, that separates the Burdenko method versus a lot of other training, conditioning, rehab methods, incorporates water. And I know, you know, there's obviously the natural fear of water and being in pools or, you know, being in other bodies of water. There's a fear of that, right? But there's also methods that we could do to help alleviate some of those, right? The one thing that really separates the Burdenko method is the aquatic aspect of it. So whenever we work simple to complicated, right? How many of our athletes try to go do a bird dog and they look terrible, but they're sitting there trying to knock out three, you know, variations above where they really are, right? So we go simple to complicated with all of our exercises, our movement patterns. In the water, we work from the deep end to the shallow end, right? The deep end allows our body to teach ourselves positioning, right? I don't know how many of you all ever put an athlete in the water. Anybody actually put an athlete in the water to run? When they run in the water the first time, the deep end, how do they look? Why? The water's gonna magnify any of our problems, right? So they're like this, verbal cue them, pull them up, actually have them work on that nice joint quality motion as they're running, right? As they run on land is how they actually run in the water. So put your athletes in the water and those modifications they've changed are the same on land. So those ones that are running right here, guess when they run on land, guess what they're really doing? Really using those hip flexors for stability. Land, we go from horizontal to sitting to standing to moving, right? Half of our athletes just want to skip, you know, do not pass go, do not collect $2, and all of a sudden want to start running, right? Maybe we need to back it down a little bit and work on some of those movement patterns in the horizontal, in the sitting, and then the standing phases. Rehabilitation, we work more, we go from a water to a land, right? Versus strength condition, we go to a land to water. Any ideas maybe why that is? We look at the endurance of movement, right? We obviously can work them a lot in the water, and we can get that endurance factor then going into land, right? And then vice versa, we can put them in land, kind of fatigue out the body, and continue to work on endurance, adding that water component. So water training, we go from deep to shallow, we talked about this already. Perform in the neutral, you know, neutral position. Benefits, there's no gravity. Hydrostatic pressure, that's great for pulling out swelling in joints, right? Loosening joints, right? Increasing blood flow to muscles, which is great for muscle nutrition. Improves mobility, flexibility, and traction. By merely standing in the water like this person is, they're actually providing a natural traction of the spine and the rest of the body and its joints, right? Help decompress the joints, okay? I've talked about a side before, every hour of land training, approximately about 15 minutes of water training. So we can understand going back to that conditioning versus rehabbing, right, going water to land or land to water, how we get that endurance component of mobility and movement quality. So typical practice, it's a little bit of interaction here. How many of our typical practices are that kind of pie? 100% of everybody here that look kind of like our regular practice? Yeah? Maybe this, maybe we actually have a little cool down falling, our conditioning session. That's kind of how we look at it a lot, right? So moving more to my talk here, you know, we look at a warm up. I think it's real important. We kind of slide our warm up and cool down a lot. And the big, you know, complaint is, well, we don't have enough time. We seem to have a lot of time when we're rehabbing injuries and, you know, having setbacks and those kinds of things. I think it's a component to really look at. So we look at your kind of traditional warm-up, includes stretching, dynamic warm-up, dynamic stretching, and sport-specific. Everyone's pretty familiar with static stretching, that dynamic. You know, obviously, there's a lot of research come out that looked at static stretching, you know, doing that post-practice versus that dynamic kind of warm-up being more pre-practice, looking at muscle activation. We look at sport-specific, you know, obviously, you know, linemen's kind of going through their drills, basketball players going through layups, you know, maybe a softball baseball player hitting off a tee and working on the mechanics actually of that specific motion pattern, right? But actually, you go back to look at all of our working out and conditioning and everything, has any of our conditioning or working out mimicked any of the types of drills that we do during our activity? I'd venture to say not. You know, a lot of them are very static, you know, single plane motion. They may have components of two planes, but they actually don't go through and mimic some of the activities that we require the body to do in sport. So a little interaction here. So when you all look at the picture on your all's left, those are all ingredients, right? Obviously the picture on the right is a cookie, right? I kind of use this analogy of how we kind of train the body a lot, right? When someone says they have tight muscles, what do? Well, they have to go stretch more. Why wasn't that stretching a component in their actual conditioning rehab and how they warm up, play and practice, right? So show of hands, who would want to eat all the ingredients by themselves on the left side? Nobody? How about the one on the right? Yeah, a lot of people, you know. So again, I use that analogy of, you know, incorporating those qualities to how we work. You know, they all work better together than as individual components. So I kind of hit on this freedom of movement. You know, so we use it as a means of helping increase flexibility, helping get the body ready for activity, really focusing, kind of getting in that zone. And we're using this as a means of of a warm-up or exercise. So freedom of movement teaches the body how to move safely, efficiently, and gracefully. How many of our athletes move very gracefully? I find that it's a terrible thing sometimes. You watch your athletes run or jump or move side to side, and it looks terrible. I mean, but again, you know, these are our star athletes. You know, I think it's something that to maybe look at and work on. It's safe because you're concentrating more on the form and the speed. It's something you kind of really blow right past. You know, we're so focused on running the 100 versus each step of the 100. So this exercise right here is performed by somebody who's practiced the Berdenko method for years, and this happens in my athletic training student from this past year. Emily Beattie, great athletic training student that I've had. So I asked her to kind of demonstrate. I did not show her this picture. I gave her the same verbal cues and same instructions, though. What I want you to do is I want you to look at the difference between the two videos. This one's going to go on for a little bit longer. It's a little longer. Anybody know some glaring kind of things right off the bat? How about the bridge position? How about the bridge position maintaining going forward and backwards? How about this all of a sudden, this drop right here? There she is, right? She never actually comes out to a true plank position, right? And as she goes back, she falls right back. So again, we talk about, you know, the gracefulness is what I call. You know, I relate a lot when I work with my athletes is, you know, picture someone playing the violin, how it goes note to note to note, right? It's not very choppy, and it goes right to note. It's very graceful, lots of breathing, focus and quality. So again, we talk about it could be during warm-up or during exercise. We really focus on this quality of movement, this gracefulness. Again, another athlete working that has studied the Berdenko method and worked with it. What are some differences we notice? Back's not straight. Actually, came back. I'm going to go to the side view of Emily here. Anybody notice that this one looks very almost like walking motion, very graceful. And as she happens to do it, it's very staggered. It's one step and the next step and the next step. Not a lot of gracefulness in the movement. So getting into conditioning, interesting, Webster in their definition of this is the process of becoming stronger and healthier by following a regular exercise program and diet. So you're going to see these kind of slides, Kermit the Frog, big hero of mine, kind of a pondering point, if you will, as we kind of transition and go to kind of different kind of talkabouts. So how well we condition athletes. So when it comes to when we associate conditioning, how come we always associate conditioning with running and cardio training? Anybody? Even though, obviously, definition-wise, it's becoming a healthier, stronger person through regular exercise and diet. Anybody familiar with this picture here? It's a famous picture. This artist used a lot of dots in his pictures. If you actually look close, there's just single dots that actually make that picture. And I really think we miss some of the big picture of conditioning sometimes, you know, the mental approach. I've never had an athlete walk out of practice and say, I'm just really tired. I just can't think. That practice is really taxing on me, right? We look at situational training. We look at, you know, what they call mental errors, right? It's in game situations, our athletes have these mental errors. Well, why isn't that a part of conditioning? Right, we look at maybe conditioning of throwing, right? Our athletes throw and throw and throw, right? But were they actually conditioned to throw, or are they actually just kind of going through the motions of throwing, right? And cross training, I kind of talked obviously about the aquatic strengthening and cardio training, if you will. But obviously you can see that sailboat. Can you all see the sailboat in the top left? That was the original picture we looked at. I think sometimes we kind of miss the bigger picture sometimes. Measuring the field, right? How many of us at the end of our practice, I'm assuming we all condition towards the end of our practice, is that pretty common? Yeah? How do we actually measure 100% effort? Coach, strength coach, athletic trainer with the stopwatch maybe? How do we know that was actually 100%? If we had John come up here and run from camera to camera up here, and we said go, how do we know that's actually 100%? How do we actually measure that? How do we measure 75%? How do we measure 25%? Well, just because they don't get from point A to point B in 18 seconds, 15 seconds, 25 seconds? How does the body know the difference? If we've never trained the body in different speeds, how does the body actually know the difference in running 100% and running 50%, right? They always talk about in football with running plays, right? The running back really has to time it to hit that gap, right? They've trained their body to hit that gap, but in conditioning, again, we go back to 18 seconds, go. You know, how do other people, strength conditioning coaches, healthcare team, I'd say that just is, I think includes everybody, coaches and volunteers, how do they know the difference? Again, they kind of go back to the stopwatch method. Right, in sport, is all activity at a percent, 100% level, 50% level? Really, sports at a variety of different levels, but yet we condition at the same pace, the same intensity, the same stopwatch. Kind of changing gears, quality and quantity. We talked about that earlier with the Brdenko qualities and the principles. Again, kind of going through some definitions. Some word association. I think it's good sometimes to kind of think outside the box. You know, so what kind of words do we find quality with? Anybody have any other kind of words besides the ones I came up with right here? Nobody? What's that? Consistency, okay. I like that's a great word. Efficiency, okay. How about for quantity? I find this is very numeric, right? It's very number-wise, right? I find we get so consumed, though, with the number of reps and sets versus the quality of movement and work. So just kind of, you know, taking this quantity and quality approach, you know, so hurdler in practice, maybe they hurdle 25 times in practice. Is that about, that's okay, I guess. Well, how was the quality of movement on the first hurdle compared to the 15th hurdle of practice, right? Were they tired or fatigued out, or do we just kind of have to keep going because we'll practice an hour and a half? We've kind of got to fill time. How about a softball or baseball player? They swing 50 times in practice. How was the quality of the fifth batting, versus the 47th? You know, where they talk about 10,000 times to perfectly tape an ankle, right? Was that what you all were taught in school as well? 10,000 times? How about a swimmer? 1,000 strokes during practice. How was the stroke quality of the 30th to the 599th, right? And we look at, you know, scapular problems with swimmers and upper extremity athletes, you know, some of those fatigue mechanisms that all of a sudden lead to other compensation patterns. Is more always better? Again, I think you look at, you know, how we put some of these practices together and conditioning. I think there's maybe other ways maybe we can include these other Brdenko qualities and principles to help expand and have better quality motion and movement. So again, kind of talking about a second ago, how often is quantity really quality? You know, when we do some of our strength tests and max, does this picture look like anybody in y'all's weight room? A lot of times, right? Do we count, for you all out there, do we count this as a rep, a successful rep? They do, they don't. Depends maybe who your strength coach is, right? Maybe who your coach is, who the athletes are. You know, but remember, this is a strength test day. This kid's been doing this maybe every day leading up to this, right? Developing those, you know, maybe poor muscular movement patterns. You know, one of the things I would say is, you know, just because you can, should you? And I think that kind of a great for this picture right here of someone who they think that they can, but really can't. Playing extras, just a couple of examples, some athletes doing different things in kind of extra time, stoppage time, overtime, extra innings. You know, we look at those times, is that a pretty significant amount of time in some of those things, or maybe some of the demands that we have for athletes? Is that kind of putting those kind of circumstances really stress the things we work on day-to-day practice? I would agree. This is a nice little screenshot from ESPN. You know, I look at the efficiency the same at the start of the at the stop of the match, at the stop of the inning, at the stop of the game, right? How many of our athletes actually have ever conditioned for 116 straight minutes? Obviously, ice hockey doesn't go for 116 straight minutes. I understand, right? But do they have that ability at the first minute as they do at the 116th minute? Or how about in a basketball game? 76 minutes is six overtimes in the NBA. So training in different planes, okay? Again, I think all of our motions that we do in sports all are in different planes. There's not one sport that I really think of that doesn't involve something outside of all three or all four, depending how you look at it. So I'm not going to obviously play all the entire video. This is from a football play this past year. Now, I've worked college football. I've did an internship with the NFL. I've worked high school football. How many of our athletes have ever conditioned like this in football? How do you condition like that? This is the end of a game. This is the time's expired now. They've already played an entire game. I'd venture to say not. This is an example of baseball. So we're going to watch the player over here at second base. It's a lot of lateral movement right there. I don't see any you know, 100-yard dashes. Nothing really, right? Soccer or ice hockey fans in here? Soccer and ice hockey are full of them. It's constantly, you know, duck, dive, and dodge, you know? Oh, come on. You know, there's lots of movement patterns that we play with, but we don't necessarily practice with. There it goes. You know, see ice hockey, they go line to line to line, you know, but there's not a lot of weaving out. You know, obviously dutching and dodging defenders. So playing up or playing down, you know, when we condition our athletes day to day out, you know, how many times do we condition them to the matches of our opponents? Right, Chip Kelly is famous for his up-tempo offense, yeah? And obviously Denzel Washington there from Remember the Titans, you know, he talked about, you know, our offense is going to be like Novocaine. It's going to be slow, long, and we're just going to wear them down, right? We're talking about that speed component with our Bodenko method and qualities. You know, how can we actually train them to incorporate those? Hardware and software problems. Show of hands here, who does one of these kinds of two training methods? Hop the Stairmaster, goes for runs, a little bit of everybody here. Keep that in mind as we go. We're going to go back to that. So I'm from the University of Michigan. Welcome to the University of Michigan. Obviously, you can see our outdoor track, our baseball field, the softball field. Can you all see the two X's up there? Yeah? Everybody see it? Kind of the top of the screen, the bottom of the screen? Okay. So just a quick poll here. So if I were to walk the blue line, it takes me about 5 minutes to walk from my athletic training room, the natatorium, down to my softball facility. And if I walk the yellow path, takes about 7 minutes. Show of hands here, a little interaction. Who all would walk the 5 minute path? Who all would walk the 7 minute path? I got a couple of them. Okay, a couple of them. A couple of sliders in there, I like it. Okay, this cartoon's kind of interesting, okay? We look at motor control, okay? The body's always gonna take the path of least resistance. So we go back to that kid that was lifting there. He's using a lot of other muscles to help recruit those patterns to help lift that muscle. So he may actually be using those things that we actually want them to do in order to succeed, right? We go to the 5 and the 7 minute path, right? We go back to those people who would like to run and use the Stairmaster. How come we have problems sometimes with tightness in our hamstrings and our calves and our low backs? Don't really hear many athletes that, you know, complain of their glutes being tired at the end of a practice, at the end of a conditioning session, no? It was interesting. I was at the University of Miami. I was covering morning football workouts, and I was gotten this kind of conversation with our head strength coach. We're going to talk about some of these Bodenko qualities because, again, it's different to them. It's different, you know, people kind of looking out and saying, well, I just don't understand how it applies. So our guys on a football field, if you will, okay, they used to run from corner. They used to run, like, up the width of the field. They had to sprint from corner to corner, kind of going diagonal, recovery going back up, and go back and forth. And I said, hey, coach, you know, maybe we can work on some glute work and hamstring strengthening. And, you know, what's your idea? Like, well, how about we have them go backwards on the recovery aspect, and they had to run forward. And by the time they got to the other half, all the guys are complaining of their glutes obviously being on fire. That's a simple change that they can make, right? We look at hardware versus software issues. Any computer people in here? Software people, a little bit, right? We know motor control is kind of like that computer, right? It's that brain going down and kind of giving signals to the body of how maybe movement works. Versus our software, it's like our movement patterns, if you will. It's a constant back and forth. It's, you know, the brain signals, the muscles doing work, giving feedback back to the brain. Going back to that cartoon we showed earlier, right? It's a slippery slope. Once the body kind of finds the cheater way to kind of get things done, that's how the body likes to work. So we look at this movement pattern, shoulder flexion, right? So muscle-wise, what do we think of? Biceps, I'll give biceps, maybe a little anterior deltoid. How about pec, pec major, pec minor, right? Remember, the body's gonna all of a sudden adapt to other muscle recruitment when those biceps get tired, right? And all of a sudden you start getting some scalene, some SCM, right? So the others altered recruitment patterns. So going back to our gentleman on the Stairmaster, we go back and look at hardware, the motor control aspect, and the software movement patterns. Again, we train in the same plane all the time, right? The body gets fatigued out, it's gonna go to those other muscles that maybe we don't necessarily want to have moving. So y'all can see the dotted line on the right, it's like that 5-minute walk from what we looked at earlier, yeah? Versus the yellow line, that little longer, but it's actually using the muscle recruitment patterns that we actually want. So I like this quote from a friend of mine, just don't stretch a tight muscle, figure out why it's tight. Test, don't guess. Okay, and I find that's a lot with how we work, you know, that hamstring's tight, athlete just wants to plop on the table and they want to stretch them out. Well, why is that muscle tight? You know, why isn't, what's going on with the glute, what's going on with the trunk, you know, what's going on with the great toe? So what are we actually testing when we do some of our conditioning tests? Would you all agree those are pretty valid of tests that we commonly use? I think so. It's kind of things I've been familiar with and seen during fitness testing, if you will. But how many of those are actually functional things that we use in athletics? Balance training. Again, we talk about balance being that first step in that Burdenko pyramid, yeah? Anybody actually seen a beaver or a lumberjack cut down a tree? Well, they make multiple cuts at different angles, different sides, successfully cut down a tree. So I guess people are saying, well, Brian, why are we talking about beavers or lumberjacks, right? Well, I think we talk about the balance component of what we do. You know, balance should be addressing different functions at different sides at different angles to successfully train our athletes. You know, athletic skill, preparation, conditioning, core work, strength and conditioning. I think that balance component really has its arms in a lot of things that we do every day. So I got a little group project. Everybody excited for that? So I'm gonna kind of break the room out here, okay? If I can kind of get these tables right here, like these ones right here, to be kind of group one, okay? And we'll group two being those back two tables back there. We're gonna kind of combine, we'll use these tables right here and then the ones back there, and then we'll use these ones here and over there. Does that sound good? Do you have a question? No? So a course that I took from Dr. Gary Gray, one of his things that he talks about in his course was the test is the exercise and the exercise is the test. So kind of think back to your athletes and we're gonna give you all kind of sports that you all are now with, okay? So a baseball example, right? My All-American, collegiate women's softball athlete of the year. Okay, contact from the ball, starting position player, the middle infielder, has to open up their hips and track down a ball at the foul line, okay? As an example of movement pattern. So another example is at contact of the ball, the outfielder has to lay out to make the second out, springing up to make throughout the base runner for the game-ending out. So as your group's here, okay, your assignment is either create a warm-up-based exercise, incorporating the Burdenko qualities, or conditioning, okay? And just kind of things to think about. Think about the athletic demands, your movement patterns. And the other thing is, what other sports move like us? You know, we have this thing of, well, they're a football player. They have to move like a football player. Well, maybe we could borrow something from the soccer group to take over back to football and help our athletes with other components of the demands they have to do day in and day out. So, obviously opening the gates here. Location, location. You all can be anywhere you want to. Your fields, your turfs, your pitches, your infields, your outfields, your ice hockey rinks, pool, court, anywhere you want to be. Your toys in the box, you can have anything you want. Unlimited budget, go nuts. So you want ladders, bands, you want cones, Bosu balls, you know, take whatever you want. Sound good? So your groups, so we'll make this over here a basketball group, okay? The back group back there, let's do like a baseball, softball, okay? We'll make this a swimming group. The group in the back will be a soccer group, okay? Volleyball, and then, football over here, and then volleyball in the back. Sound good? Yeah? Let's take like 5, 7 minutes. Kind of think of it. Again, you can either do a warm-up activity or a conditioning-based activity using the qualities and principles I'll have up here. Okay? And go. Are we ready to kind of reconvene and kind of go over some of the things we talked about in our groups? Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And remember some of our stuff that we talked about, like you're talking about doing with your jumps and your cones back and forth. Remember the balance component. You know, even though basketball players all jump this way, maybe adding that component of maybe a jump to the side or a jump and twist the body in the landing motion. Because obviously in basketball, you know, even though everyone goes up, they may actually come down this way. You know, so as they're jumping up, how rotate and land and jump down mechanics-wise as well. Good. Yeah, 90 degrees, 180, you know, 270s, 360s, you know, really work on that entire motion, both sides as well. Absolutely. Good. How about my group two, my baseball softball team? How about my soccer group? You know, we look at flexibility. Obviously, flexibility is a huge component of, you know, of everyone. It's just not the kids. It's everybody. Remember, I talked about the elastic bands. Remember, if you put a band one way, you can work on strength, and by putting it in the opposite pull of direction, you actually work on flexibility at the same time. That band helps assist in flexibility. So maybe kind of keep that in mind with some of the band work for the hips. You know, by pulling, you know, the bands here, we're pulling out. Obviously, we're strengthening up your hip abductors, yeah? By putting it out, though, on the outside, as we're coming back out, it's actually help increase some of that flexibility as well. Maybe, you know, the angle of pull as well. So maybe it's just not straight outside. Maybe it's coming more out the side as you're coming out. Good. How about my swimming group? They actually had to call their coach. We had a good talk.
We'd be using bands. Flexibility can be a factor into working with and strengthening your strokes. So there's several ways you can use the bands. The other thing would be like using plyo boards. Short ones for doing push-ups. As you do push-ups, you would put the hand on the boards higher up, add up the boards to strengthen one side, work the other side, and that way you would be doing stretching and strengthening.
Okay.
Okay. Bands, you can do the strokes, leg strokes, having someone hold them to the side and work like a crawl, especially in the butterfly. You can pull the bands one direction, you know, external or the lateral side or the medial side, working the strokes, you know, pulling resistance. Help me out here.
So one thing I was going to add to, I didn't add earlier, we're talking about your all's balance board. You know, obviously with a freestyle stroke, they're laying in that horizontal position.
The other thing is using certain yoga stretches to stretch out the lower trunk, area. One of the best stretches would be a pigeon stretch, but that works on the lower back, hip flexors, glutes. And Ashley came up with the pad that she saw on one on YouTube. About a 2-inch pad, about 3 foot, you know, semi rigid, but you could lay on the water and practice strokes and kicks.
Okay.
And balance.
And obviously, you know, swimming adds an interesting component of that. In fact, you're in the water in a horizontal position and having to core stabilize in that position. So, you know, maybe putting someone on the board and having them maintain that as they maybe do their positions. And I am actually short on time, I apologize. awesome, well, I really appreciate you all inviting me down here to do this talk. I'll be around if y'all have any other questions outside of here. Just again, I really appreciate everyone coming this morning, and if you have any questions, let me know.